ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Well, Warwick Hadfield joins us again for Warwick's weekly wrap. His take on everything worth knowing in the sporting world. Warwick, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
It's great to be here, as I always keep saying, Philip, and it really is great. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoy this.
Great to have you with us, too. Netball news. Liz Ellis, the greatest netballer ever?
Well, she's the most capped.
She's the most capped, isn't she? Has been appointed to the board of Netball Australia. Now, this is the end of a process, isn't it? Take us through it.
Well, she called the pay negotiations between Netball and Australia and the players toxic. And I think if we were to give Liz Ellis another epithet apart from Australia's most capped player, it's the always outspoken Liz Ellis. As a former Diamonds captain, she did what I think any former Diamonds captain should do and stuck up for the players in this you know, very, very bitter dispute. I mean, you remember that not long after the Australians won the World Cup, there was a presentation evening and they were threatened if they didn't turn up as part of their protests against the reluctance of Netball Australia to give them a pay rise, they would be sued legally. And many things crossed my mind when I heard that. But the first of those is, doesn't anybody look at sporting history? If you become a CEO or chair of a major sporting body, you would look back through history and say, golf, it went professional. Tennis went professional. Cricket, World Series cricket. Silvio Fischini in the AFL with the right to go and play where he wanted to. Dennis Tutty in the NRL. The players always win. But somebody or a group of somebodies at Netball Australia thought they could go against history and everything else. And, of course, they lost out badly. The PR dispute was won easily by the players. And the pay dispute in the finish. And I think
What was the pay dispute all about, really?
Well, they just wanted a little bit more of the pie. And they were prepared. You know, and this is the same thing that Cricket Australia went through about 4 or 5 years ago. Everybody wants a bit more of the pie. And they were prepared to do the things, the marketing things and everything else, to help generate the pie. And, you know, it's basic. Without the players, there isn't a competition.
No.
And look, during that process, it was revealed that Liz Ellis, of course, as well as being this most capped player and the outspoken Liz Ellis, has also got tremendous marketing and media skills, which she's developed since she stopped playing. And she would have been just an important advisor. The other thing is she's still coaching at the junior level, her daughter up on the New South Wales coast. So she's got the feel of the grassroots. She's got all the experience. And she would have been a great person to have on the board. But they basically said, thanks, but no thanks. We'll call you. Don't call us type of approach. But now that's all changed. And I looked at the Netball Australia media release that came out about it. And they're not yet singing from the same hymn sheet, but at least they've got the same hymn book. And I watched and heard Liz Ellis interviewed on Radio National this morning and elsewhere. And she's saying this is not the final rapprochement. This is just the start. And those scars from last year are going to take a long time to heal, but hopefully they will for the good of the whole game. And I mean, look,
where is it at, do you think? Netball.
Well, it's in a tricky situation because, you know, you look around at so many young women these days decided, I grew up, I had to play netball because there was nothing else. But look around and see now there's the AFLW, there's Super W.
Women's rugby league,
Women's rugby league, the Super W rugby union competition, which finished last Sunday. Yeah. And there's all these other opportunities.
Women's soccer, of course.
Well, women's soccer has been around. It's been around for a lot longer, but it's growing in strength, given that the A-League Women's Grand Final is on this weekend at the end of one of the most successful seasons ever. And looking at the West Coast Fever, who are on top of the ladder at the moment, but they've lost so many players in the off-season for various reasons. But one of those reasons was Verity Simmons, one of their mid-court players, has gone off to try her luck at Australian rules football. So that's a challenge. And I'm sure Liz Ellis would know that from coaching. I mean, she started out on the asphalt courts at Milam Street in South Windsor. And if you go there on a Saturday morning, it's just a kaleidoscope of ants' nest of all these young women, you know, playing the game. And it's a tremendous base from which to build. And I think that Liz Ellis is aware that netball just can't afford to lose that, even though the AFLW has the mighty marketing power of the AFL.
Well, the trouble is, if you're a talented and athletic person, you know, there are a lot more opportunities probably in AFLW if you can play it. Just given the number, I mean, there are more teams. There's more high representative levels opportunities for you,
and there's probably a lot more money. But you don't get to travel the world as a netball player. You get to go. I mean, it's the old empire, basically South Africa, the Caribbean,
New Zealand,
and England. But it's, you know, I mean, the pull of international travel is always something that can be thrown up to get people to stick with netball. And the Diamonds have a tremendous history in the psyche of Australian sport. They really have done something special. At the moment, they hold everything you can hold, the World Cup, the Constellation Cup, anything they throw at them, they tend to win. We talked to their coach, Stacey Marinkovic, the other night. She's had tremendous success since taking over. And, you know, she took over what was already a highly successful team under Norma Plummer and, you know, anyone else you want to point out over the years.
Yep, indeed. Anyway, Liz Ellis will be, I am sure, a hugely positive contribution to the netball board. Now, WADA and their independent review of the Chinese doping saga. You and I aren't the only ones who think it's time to get rid of WADA and start all over again.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of people since we spoke about this last Tuesday who have written opinion pieces and so on. And this is even after that WADA, you know, realising that the PR and the spin was not working at all, decided to appoint Eric Cottier as an independent reviewer. And everybody certainly Googled Eric Cottier and discovered he wasn't all that independent after all. He was involved with an organisation that had made donations to WADA. But WADA says these tentacles don't mean anything, but at the moment, a lot of WADA's denials don't mean anything. It's interesting when incestuous is not the proper word, but it's so intertwined. Just the example, Sport Integrity Australia has written to WADA expressing its disquiet, as it had to, because, you know, the way that Sport Integrity Australia has gone after the likes of Shane Ajak, Peter Bowl, and the 34 Essendon players, and where, you know, they appealed all the way to the Court of Arbitration of Sport, while the Chinese got off scot-free, even though they tested it positive. Anyway, David Sharp has written to WADA to express his disquiet, but David Sharp answers to Annika Wells, the Minister for Sport, and she's on the WADA committee. So he's writing to the organisation on which his boss sits to criticise his boss's organisation. And I think, you know, I've watched it happen. There's lots of people who've turned WADA and anti-doping into a career gravy train. And I think, yes, I mean, rubbing it out and redrawing is probably going a little bit too far, but there needs to be an overall overhaul of the whole process. Credibility's I see that the head of the IOC has come out with his full support of WADA, but he had to say that. But I think generally, particularly listening to the people associated with the Shane Ajak saga, for want of a better term, listening to the logic that they put forward, that this woman, she was able to prove at CAS that she had ingested this thing inadvertently, but still was banned for 2 years. And yet 23 Chinese people just waved through, and
because it was just something on the kitchen floor, which apparently everyone ingested.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a joke.
Yeah, look, it is a joke, and I think more and more Annika Wells. I think, you know, it's been touted for some time that having the Minister for Sport on the board at WADA is a wonderful thing, and it gives Australia a voice and all this. But I think it's a conflict of interest now, and I think the Minister for Sport would do well to get off it and become a full voice, you know, saying that some of this nonsense going on now is really just diminishing. There is a very genuine thing here that needs to be looked at, and that's making sure that people compete and compete freely on an equal platform. And at the moment, that just seems to be being trashed. And I can understand why, you know, the head of the US doping agency, lots of other people are really up in arms at the moment. And it's not a good look, particularly with the Olympics not that far away.
No, exactly. All right, look, a few other things. The A-League women's finalists confirmed?
Yeah, look, Melbourne City is going to host Sydney FC after they won the second legs of their semi-final. In fact, Sydney FC was a draw, but they already had the goal up in the first leg. And it's being touted as the most successful season ever for the the Women's League. And I guess that flows on from everything that the Matildas have done. But according to the
Adjunct Prof... It is afterglow from the Matildas, isn't it? Do you think or not? Or
well, it has to be in part that. But anyway, they're talking about the Adjunct Prop from the people running the show, record crowds, record club memberships, record broadcast viewers. And of course, there's going to be lots of exciting football. And it will be pretty exciting. Melbourne City is interesting in that way back when they first came into the competition, the first thing they did, they had the salary cap of about $180,000, which is not a lot compared to what the amounts of money that go around in men's soccer. But they used every cent of it to put together the best team they could. And that's, you know, they've always been there and thereabouts, and they're in another final now. So, you know, it's been tough times, I guess, for the men's in recent times, losing that under-23 tournament when not qualifying for the Olympic Games. But the women's game, yes, you're right. It's no doubt it's because of what's happening, and not just happening here, but, you know, Mary Fowler, for instance, is, you know, performing brilliantly in England, and that news comes back here immediately. It happens these days. So it's not like the old days when Helen McGilvray had his Statelix going at and his little rubber band and so on. So it lots of interest in what's happening, you know, with the Australian players playing in Europe and playing there. And I think, yes, it is flowing through. And it's, look, good luck to both sides. Sydney FC always there and thereabouts as well.
Now, a Super Rugby women's results there.
Well, it was a record there as well because the New South Wales Waratahs beat Fiji and drew a 50-14. And, you know, they say rugby can be a bit boring, but boy, lots of tries was being scored in that particular match. And there was one ugly incident. A Fijian player put her boot into the face of a Waratah. That'll be dealt with appropriately. But and that takes a bit of the gloss off what Fiji and drew has. They were the defending champions and they'd won it the year before. And they do that, and really on a winger and a prayer, you might say. You might remember last year, they weren't paid by the Fijian Rugby Union. So they were living with friends and being fed, in fact, by friends in Brisbane before they won the grand final last year. And they don't have any of the support, that the resources that the New South Wales Waratahs women would have. So it's quite a thing for them to be up and about there. But Desiree Miller scored thrice for the Waratahs. And there was an interesting interview just before the game. Emily Robinson, who was the prop who broke the record for most games in the competition, part of her interview, she had a tip, she said, for Phil Waugh, the CEO of Rugby Australia. It's about time to expand the competition. It only runs for 7 weeks, so you just start to get to know the players and everything that's going on, and it's all over. And last year, Phil Waugh got a tip about going out and getting a sponsor for Women's Rugby Union in this country, and he went and did that the week before the grand final. And Emily Robinson's saying now the next tip you need to follow, Phil, is to expand the competition and make it go for a bit longer. Now, that might mean bringing in New Zealand sides, as is the case with the men's competition. I don't think there is the critical mass in this country to expand the number of women's teams, while at the same time, of course, the Super Men's competition is looking to dump the Melbourne Rebels.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's in all sorts of problems, rugby in this country, isn't it?
They survived the AGM yesterday.
Yeah.
The SOAR group failed to get off the ground. The SOAR, you've got to come to arm these days with an acronym, and they were called the Supporters of Australian Rugby Reform, and they're an angry rump, and as Daniel Herbert pointed out, there's been lots of angry rumps in Australian Rugby Union for a long time. It used to be called the Queensland Rugby Union, but anyway, so that survived, and they're broke. But they've got this line of credit. I think it's $80 million. They've used 50 of it. But they believe that the tour next year by the British and Irish Lions, never leave out the Irish when you mention the Lions, is going to bring in sufficient money to repay all of that. But the challenges remain, I think. Everyone I talk to says they don't do enough for the grassroots. They spend too much money chasing rugby players like Joseph Suwali or whoever else it might have been in the past, and not enough getting their own, producing their own. But against that, of course, they produce their own, and along comes Peter Volandis with a great fat checkbook.
And just buys them up.
These young blokes.
Well, it's a bit squeezed. It's squeezed in this country, isn't it? Because, I mean, you've got two big winter football codes, well-resourced, after similar types of players, you know. at least in
rugby league, there aren't too many.
Yeah.
Well, there aren't too many five foot wide, five foot tall players in the front row from rugby union who can transfer even to rugby league. I remember Tony Darcy came back from the Wallabies tour in 1981. You know, was the next the great prop that Australian rugby had been looking for, and he got signed by Penrith. To play rugby league, and he spent most of the season, I think he played one or two games in the first, and he just didn't adapt, and he went straight back to Brisbane and is now a part of the fabric of rugby football in Brisbane. But, you know, there are differences between the codes, but, you know, I guess a guy who's 6 foot six could play in the ruck in Australian rules football or play in the second row in rugby union. So, yeah, it's there.
What do you think about the Super Rugby comp, though? I mean, does it need major reorganisation?
Well, I was only talking to some friends about this. There's no, I don't know whether it's just me being nostalgic, but there's no Campo, there's no Nick Farr Jones, there's no person who sort of transcends the game. And you know, everybody knew who Campo was, the Struggletown shuffle, the guy who could throw a weird pass and lose you a game or throw another pass and win you a World Cup semi-final. People, and then, I don't know. It's just, I mean, apart from Quade Cooper and Kirtley Beale's nightclub things, not much gets across the traditional border between non-rugby and and rugby areas in this country. Yeah. So I don't know what else. The Super Rugby competition is not igniting my interest, and I love rugby. I love the game. I covered it in France. I covered it in Britain, I've covered it in Australia, and I, you know, no one wants it to thrive more than me. I love the fact that this country supports four elite rugby football sports. I mean, I know Australian rules football through the AFL and rugby league through the NRL are dominating at the moment, but it wasn't that long ago that rugby could really hold its own against them. Mm. And
yeah, but it's been a process of slow decline, though, hasn't it?
It has. Mm. And the money, the Israel Folau thing didn't help the image of the sport and didn't help the coffers either. I mean, it's just been so many disasters, PR disasters. And, you know, perception's everything. Everyone thinks that rugby football's boring and it's badly managed and it's going broke, then that's what they talk about in the pubs or on social media.
Or even here. That's right. Even here. Hey, just briefly before you go, is Fraser McGurk going to get into the T20 World Cup squad?
Well, I think the leak, and it looked like a very well-organised leak that came out this morning that he's going to miss, is a bit of a softening up process. Now, he's belting the ball everywhere in the IPL, but he might have just left it too late. I think he is a superstar in the making. But I think the other interesting one is Steve Smith. You know, we've got the hyphenated name. We've got the big name, Stephen Peter Devereux Smith. Could miss out as well because they're going to take two wicket keepers in Inglis and Matty Wade, and that gives them, you know, that extra. They can bat one of those guys in the top six, and the rest of it's a pretty well settled thing. But Fraser McGurk's only 22. In the current cricket system in Australia, you don't find many Neil Harveys and Ian Craigs and Doug Walters where if you're good enough, you're old enough. I think we sort of make them come through the system a lot more these days, and I think that's what they're going to do with Fraser McGurk. But the announcement's coming later this week, and George Bailey is an interesting character to be the chief selector. I mean, he was he was at the whim of the selectors himself not that long ago, and they pretty much dumped him from Test cricket. So he'll be interesting to see which way he go. He has hinted that performances in the IPL will be taken into account, so we'll know by Thursday or Friday.
Exactly. Warwick, always great to talk. Thank you.
Good on you, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.